Game on, weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Betty De Silva for driving us through the afternoon from Croke Park. It is Thursday, August 29th. I am Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, we'll hear from Ireland head coach Hamer Halgrimsson as he names his first squad for the upcoming Nations League matches against England and Greece. Sticking with soccer, Rebecca Cray reviews the Women's FAI Cup quarterfinals and looks ahead to a big weekend of League of Ireland Women's Premier Division action. Darren Frehill dials in from Paris with all the latest from day one of the Paralympic Games as both Roisin Nureen and Nicole Turner advance to swimming finals this evening. In golf, Greg Allen joins us from Carton House at the Women's Irish Open, and Jeff Shepherd has his eye on America with some good news after all for the Irish contingent forging careers in the NFL. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can send us a text on 51552, WhatsApp 087-187-9200, or we are on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. A packed, busy show as always. Some news headlines to start us off this evening. And we will begin with rugby. Sam Monaghan has been ruled out of Ireland's WXV campaign next month due to injury, with head coach Scott Beaman naming a 35-player squad for the tournament in Canada, as well as a warm-up test with Australia in Belfast. The second row, who co-captained Ireland during the Women's Six Nations, has picked up an injury and joins Beaveen Parsons, Evian Riley, Kate Corrigan, Natasha Behan and Sive McGrath among the list of high-profile injuries. While Beaman is dealing with that lengthy injury list, the head coach has been able to call on the services of several of Ireland's Olympic Sevens squad, with the experienced Stacey Flood and Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe making their return to the 15-a-side game. The squad in full can be viewed on the RTE Sport website. We will hear from both Hamer Halgrimsson, John O'Shea and indeed Lee Carsley later on in the show as they name their squads for the Nations League. From a Republic of Ireland point of view, Hamer Halgrimsson has named his first squad ahead of those matches with England and Greece at the Aviva Stadium. Seamus Coleman and Evan Ferguson are included after shaking off recent injury problems. And there's also a first call-up for Leicester City winger Casey McAteer. For England, Noni Madueke, Morgan Gibbs-White, Tino Livramento and Angel Gomez have received their maiden senior England call-ups, but Kyle Walker is absent from interim managers Lee Carsley's first squad. Harry Maguire and Jack Grealish return, having been left out of the final Euro 2024 squad. There is no place for squad members from the Euros: Ivan Toney, Aaron Ramsdale, Joe Gomez, Lewis Dunk and indeed Adam Wharton. So we will hear from all of the managers later. We'll chat to Rebecca, sticking with soccer, Greg Allen and indeed Jeff Shepherd. Now, the Champions League draw took place a short time ago. The new format, so the long established group stage format featuring eight pools of four teams, has been scrapped. The purists are up in arms. In its place comes a 36 team league phase. Instead of six games each in the old format, teams will now play eight matches, four at home, four away, against two opponents from each of the four seeding pots. The top eight teams will qualify automatically for the last 16, while the teams placed 9 to 24th will enter a new knockout phase playoff round to decide the final eight last 16 berths. Teams finishing 25th and lower will be out. Teams do not drop down to the Europa League anymore. The same format indeed will be used for the Europa League, with the Conference League the same too, except teams will only play six initial matches instead of eight. I hope you're still with me. So after that mouthful, what we do know from the draw is that Celtic will play RB Leipzig at home, Borussia Dortmund away, Club Brugge at home, Atlanta away, Young Boys at home, Dinamo Zagreb away, Slovan Bratislava at home and Aston Villa away. Liverpool's opponents: Real Madrid at home, Leipzig away, Leverkusen at home, Milan away, Lille at home, PSV away, Bologna at home, Girona away. So former Champions League finals with the ties against Milan, Real Madrid and the Xabi Alonso derby with Leverkusen in Anfield. For Arsenal fans, they will be preparing for a Champions League campaign at home to PSG, away to Inter, at home to Shakhtar Donetsk, away to Atalanta, at home to Dinamo Zagreb, away to Sporting Lisbon, at home to Monaco and away to Girona. For Manchester City, they'll have Inter at home, PSG away, Club Brugge at home, Juventus away, Feyenoord at home, Sporting Lisbon away, Sparta Prague at home and Slovan Bratislava away as well. So quite a mouthful, quite different shall we say. And we will recap in full with all of that a little bit later on. We will hear a lengthy interview with Hamer Halgrimsson and John O'Shea, who are both up in front of the media. But just, we were mentioning the English clubs in European competition there, and I gave news of the English team that, or the English squad, I should say, that will be facing Ireland in the Aviva Stadium in that Nations League match very shortly. So let's hear from the interim England manager, Lee Carsley, who, of course, has a bit of an Irish connection.
It was a real proud part of my career. You know, 40 caps for the Republic of Ireland is something that I'm proud of. You know, I'm as equally as proud as of today. You know, being named interim manager, head coach of England is a massive achievement and something that I don't underestimate, but I'm definitely proud of my heritage. You know, I was back in Cork in the summer at a family reunion, so it was good timing that, you know, to go back and see so many family. Something that I'm, you know, I'm really looking forward to the game in Dublin. I think it's going to be a brilliant occasion, a proud moment. You know, obviously, you know, I've not been back to Dublin for a while in terms of from a football point of view, but it's a match that I'm really motivated for. You know, cannot wait to get there.
51552 is the text number. A couple of texts already in, and they refer to the under 21 Irish squad as well that was named today. And the news surrounding that, Franco Ume and Emmanuel Adebayega have received their first call-ups for the Republic of Ireland under 21s for the upcoming UEFA European Championship qualifiers against Turkey and Latvia. Head coach Jim Crawford has named a 24-man squad for those matches. Crystal Palace and former Cork City forward Uma, as well as Dundee United and former Drogheda United defender Adebayega, are the only new faces. There's a return to the squad for Killian Phillips, fresh from his loan move to Scottish Premiership side St Mirren, and James Furlong, who was on loan at Wimbledon, but Boston Lowell and Tony Springett, who featured in the last camp, miss out. Teo Adamarola, Zach Gilsonen, Sean Gren, Conor Carthy and Adam Murphy are all working their way back from injury. Ireland will base themselves in Dublin before flying out to Istanbul for the qualifier against Turkey on Friday, September 6th. And then the young boys in green return to Ireland before facing Latvia and Tala Stadium the following Tuesday. So no Tom Cannon, Festi Abasele not called up by either Ireland senior or under 21 squad today. Quite surprising, says a texter. Casey McAteer, good addition to the Ireland senior squad. Here's hoping, says another texter as well. And Paul from Sligo, given the fact that Liverpool and Southampton have signed new goalkeepers, does that spell the end of Keller and Bazunu at those clubs? And indeed perhaps Mark Travers as well, with Bournemouth looking to, or sorry, Southampton of course finalising a loan deal for Aaron Ramsdale. So we shall see. We're going to take a short break, and then Darren Frehill will be dialing in from Paris. We do have a swimming final to look forward to as well in about 8 minutes' time. Nicole Turner is up in action in her final of the S6 50 metre freestyle. Devril Brady fifth in her heat. She didn't advance to the final. I mentioned in the intro as well, Róisín Nurín is through to the final. The S13 100 metre butterfly finished fourth in her heat. So Róisín Nurín's final is at 7:10. We will be bringing you live commentary from Nicole Turner's final. She goes, as I mentioned, at 6:17, and we'll wrap up all of the rest of the Paralympics after the break. So stick with us here. Lots to come on Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
I don't know what the 2FM schedulers are trying to do to me playing Oasis just before we come back from a break. Darren Frehill, focus me. You are in Paris at the Paralympic Games. I mentioned we have a couple of swimming finals to look forward to. How has day one been for your good self?
I'm good. Will you keep me in mind for a few Oasis tickets? I only want two.
I'll do my best. I've been schmoozing, going around pressing the flesh in the corridors of 2FM, but no joy as of yet, Darren. No joy as of yet.
Well, I promise you, I'll give you the best Paralympic update you could get in return. How about that? Deal?
Deal. Absolute deal. Listen, I did mention there, we have Róisín Nurín and Nicole Turner to look forward to in finals in the swimming in, what, about 4 minutes' time or so, and we will bring you live commentary. There's Paris cycling and para archery as well today. Lots going on for Team Ireland, Darren.
Yeah, no, the swimming is look at it, it's a big one here in Paris this evening. Róisín Nurín, Nicole Turner, you know, getting, I think, the Team Ireland off to a great start this morning, you know, reaching their respective finals. So Nurín fourth in her S13 100 meter butterfly heat earlier today, the time 1:06.40, you know, and she's qualified for this final. To be honest with you, I know she was very happy to get through to the final. I was a small bit disappointed she didn't finish a little bit higher up in the rankings. But look at it. She's got great form into this. You know, did so well at the European Championships earlier in the year. lots of experience under her belt from Tokyo as well. So I was really hoping that, you know, and look, maybe she can swim a bit faster in the final. Let's hope she can and get among the medals. It'd be terrific. And look, at I'm a huge fan of Nicole Turner. I've kind of watched her, real privileged to watch her grow up in the pool. And, you know, she's one of our more experienced campaigners now. And you know what, I she's an action. I wouldn't count her out either again, you know, maybe in terms of qualifying in the 50 meter freestyle in her event. She came third in her heat today. So she's a bit of work to do to get into the medals. But you know what? It's all in the night. It's all in the final, and nerves and everything else. You never know what might happen. But let's keep the fingers crossed for both of them. I was at the track cycling myself, Shane, and no finals there for us, unfortunately. But I have to say, in terms of the two races that we were involved in, we weren't expecting them to get to finals. So I think the athletes had eyes on other events. Martin Gordon and his pilot, Owen Mullen, and Damien Vereker and Mitchell McLaughlin, they both missed out on their medal race in the 4,000 metres individual pursuit. And then with Rachel Timothy, what a story she is, finished seventh overall in the 3,000 metres individual pursuit race at the Velodrome. She prefers the outdoor stuff, the time trial and the outdoor road race. So we actually caught up with her afterwards, and lovely little story this, because her daughter, 1 year old today, is at the Velodrome to watch her. Here's what she had to say.
Rachel, congratulations. A personal best here in Paris. That was outstanding. You pretty happy with that?
Yeah, like, I can only go faster than I went before. That was my goal coming here. Like, it's never, for me, it's not yet medals. Like, it's go out, go faster than you've ever gone and just keep taking bits off it. So, yeah, like, I didn't expect that much of a PB, but I'm delighted, like, to get the first one over, yeah.
What was it out there that went so well for you, do you think?
I think it was a good draw. Like, I had someone to chase, you know? And then once I seen her, like, I just forgot what lap I was on and just, like, chasing. So it was nearly a race in a race, like, which works really good for me, yeah.
And obviously you have a lot more events to go in, and I know the road is a particular favourite of yours. Yeah. So this was, a really good foundation to put in.
Yeah, fact, like, to start off with this event, which is one of my good ones, and then to finish with my best event, it's going to be, you know, filling in all the gaps in between and just giving everything on the road then.
Very significant day. I was talking to some family members, yeah. And there's a special lady just up to the left of us here, and she has a very birthday.
I was trying not to look beforehand, but yeah, it's my daughter Lucy's first birthday, so happy birthday, Lucy, I suppose. I go up and see them now, and then, yeah, it's amazing. Like, I haven't seen her in 22 days because we've been on camp and here, like, so to see her not through a camera where she's trying to grab the phone, it'll be nice, yeah.
Must have been really tough, Rachel, to do that. We know, elite athletes, the sacrifices you have to make, the work that goes into it, but this is maybe an unseen part of it, a one-year-old at home and not getting to see her.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, if I was doing it for myself, I'd have gave up a long time ago, like. So I did it for her. Like, I obviously had a really hard year in qualifying. So I just wanted to be here, and sure, you know, anyone can do anything. And as she grows up, hopefully, if I keep cycling, she'll remember it, and sure that she can be whatever she wants to be.
Brilliant. And a final question. There's a big crowd from Galway and Roscommon here. They've come out in force. And when I spoke to you in Tokyo, there was no one here. How important is that for you?
Oh, it's amazing. Like, I was trying not to see anyone before the race, but they were actually staying in the hotel. I seen a few of them. I didn't realise they were coming. I was kind of like, oh, crap, now I've seen you. Like, so it's amazing. Like, and I definitely love coming from a football background, people shouting at you. Like, I could hear them shouting. It was just like, go harder. So
they're good stock.
Yeah, they're good. Galway and Roscommon, they're good.
Oh, she's brilliant, isn't she? That is Rachel Timothy. And happy birthday to little Lucy as well. Kerry Leonard also in action, Shane, today. 21st in the individual competition. This is kind of a ranking day, the first day, and it kind of puts you into the draw then for tomorrow, the competition then, the elimination round takes place tomorrow. So this was a kind of a warm-up day, but she came 21st out of all the competitors in terms of that. So she's warmed up, she's got the eye in, and let's hope she can push on tomorrow.
Here's hoping. Nicole Turner's final is slightly delayed, so we're going to keep you on the line, Darren. There's a medal presentation ongoing at the moment. Nicole Turner in the S6 50 metre freestyle final. As I mentioned, Roisin Irian will be at 10 past 7 in her S13 100 metre butterfly final. Just on the paracycling, and that's a great story from Rachel Timothy as well, and the daughter's birth. It's really, really beautiful, and it's great to hear those stories as well. What's great about the paracycling as well, you mentioned that. Okay, they missed out on finals, perhaps a couple of them, but PBs were set, which is a good news story.
No, absolutely, Shane. And I'm a big fan of the cycling myself, to be honest. And the lads that were involved there, Martin Gordon and his pilot Owen Mullen, you know, they were absolutely brilliant. They're sprinters, so this was a longer event. So what they did, they just went all out for the first 500, lashed into it, and they treated it as the shorter race. Then just it was about getting to the line then for the rest of it. But Damien Vereker and Mitchell McLaughlin, this is a new partnership. Damien has been at the Paralympics before. And they put in an absolutely savage run. National record, their time, 4 minutes, 14.8 seconds. And they were terrific. And I have to say, in fairness to them, the national record, but then they beat the personal best as well by almost 6 seconds, 5.6 seconds, which is phenomenal. And they were buzzing after that race. And I think for all... the three riders that were involved today, the stadium was absolutely packed and there was huge French support. And I think it may have given our guys a huge lift to be racing in this sort of atmosphere. They probably haven't tasted anything like that before, especially those that were in Tokyo, because there was no crowds. So to have that packed stadium, the noise, the French getting behind their riders, I think it kind of pushed our guys on. And well done to them. We don't have a velodrome, by the way. Mm. I'm hoping that's going to change really soon. There's talk we might get two. They'll be like the 46A. We're definitely getting one on the campus, Ireland. That we've seen the plans for it. It's going to be terrific. And there's talk now that they're going to build a second one in Limerick, which will be brilliant for the regions, I think.
Yeah.
And this is a sport we are going to absolutely flourish in. Paralympic, Olympics, we're going to take it on. I have a good feeling. The Irish are made for this sport. It's like the rowing.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely brilliant. Yesterday, Eddie Dunbar's first Grand Tour stage win, coinciding with the start of hopefully plans in place for that velodrome in Limerick, and hopefully the one in Abbottstown as well gets underway, or foundations are laid sooner rather than later. With paracycling, we've multiple medalists from previous games, Katie George and Levy competing for the first time in Paris tomorrow. There's also archery, athletics and rowing on tomorrow as well. And there's even more swimming. Darren, Siobhan Madigan was on yesterday and kind of teeing up the opening ceremony as well. And we were talking about the atmosphere around Paris as well, because there was such buy-in and it's the success of the Olympics overall. And you mentioned the atmosphere from the French crowd with some of the French competitors today as well. Is there a genuine buzz and general buzz around the place on day one of the Paralympic Games?
No, there is, big time. And do you know what? I think probably there wasn't as much build-up this time around in terms of the Paralympics are hype. But I actually put that down to the fact that we've had this most insane summer of sport, Shane. We've had Euros, GA Championships, Olympics, and now the Paralympics. And I just think it's been coming at us like 100 miles an hour. So I think the build-up was probably a little bit low-key, both at home for people tuning in, but also here in France as well. Like the Olympics was a huge high. But you can actually see it in the tickets sales alone, because I think there's 2.5 million tickets available for all the Paralympic events, right? And they were kind of getting a little bit concerned, but since the Olympics and now, they've almost 2 million tickets sold for all the events. So there's 500,000 or thereabouts tickets still available for certain events. Many of them are totally sold out. And I think that actually speaks volumes. I think the French probably, their focus was on the Olympics, but then when they saw how well the Olympics went, I think they're really buying into this now. And look, you can't walk down the street here. It's a huge city, but you walk down the street and, you know, you just, there's something, you know, reminds you about the Paralympics. It might be the supporters or the colours. Like, in fairness to the French, I have to say, I've been coming here for many years, particularly for sports events, but they have really gotten behind this. And I've seen a new kind of, not that they weren't warm before, you know, but they're really warm, really inviting and hospitable. And I think they're just embracing both the Olympics and the Paralympics like nothing before, and full credit. They're making it the event it is.
Yeah. Our producer, Ronan, I'm sure will forgive me for going on a bit of a tangent here now, but I actually saw a tweet of yours, Darren, and you were quoting our great late colleague Colin Murray, who was singing the praises of the Paralympic Games. The Olympic Games is one thing, but the Paralympic Games are almost on a level of themselves.
Yeah. Look, to be honest with you, Colin was brilliant to me when I was starting out in RT. He was a real mentor, not just to me, to so many of us, to be honest with you, and a great friend. And he's been, I think his first Paralympics might have been I had him back in Sydney, and he was one of the first kind of broadcasters to kind of report on it, and got little or no coverage back then. And I think he'd been the one, he'd been keeping it along on the go in terms of a little bit of coverage. And like this Paralympic, in terms of coverage, did not, it just exploded into life in London 2012. But Colin was all, when he took ill, you know, he was worried that it wouldn't get the attention it deserved. So he was always taking, trying to convince Eamon Horan and myself, you know, keep this going for me, guys, keep it going. So we both agreed to it, you know. So Eamon and myself, we've been ever present, to be honest, at these events and driving it on. But then it just exploded life. He said to me at the time, like, I wrote it after I wrote it down. So this is almost word perfect. But what he said to me at the time, Shane, was, you know, the Olympics is the Olympics. You know, some say the greatest show on earth, but it doesn't come close to the Paralympics. And at the time I was kind of going, yeah, Colin, yeah, yeah. And you know, it was actually only once London came around then I was there. Like, it transcends sport, the whole thing, doesn't it? And it's a spectacle. And, you know, I always come away from these games with kind of life lessons, because I'm looking at people, they're just pushing boundaries. They want to be accepted. These athletes want to be accepted on their own terms. And to be honest with you, Colin was 100% right. It's more than sport, and that's why I think it is a very special event.
No, it most certainly is. And from Stephen McNamara, Paralympic Ireland CEO, and a few of the rest of the backroom team as well. And again, Siobhan was kind of alluding to it yesterday. From support out there, it might be a case of fans travelling out on a day-by-day basis, because the action is coming thick and fast. It's an 11-day competition in terms of actual competitive action, 12 days, we've included the opening ceremony, of course, as well. So have you encountered many Irish fans? Listen, it is only day one, so I suspect that perhaps it might build as the tournament progresses.
No, it's been you can actually see it, you know, it's very visible. And I think, well, a couple of things. I think the Olympics, the place was just Irish everywhere. I was actually blown away by the numbers of Irish people that were here. And I think it's the same for the Paralympics, and probably not in the same numbers. But do you know what? One thing about the Paralympics that I think might work better in their favor, everyone is back to school now. Okay. And I would love to have seen it kind of, you know, if it could be brought forward a little bit into the summer months. And I think it would really benefit people, because the Olympics itself was a very family orientated event. There was a lot of families over for it, and I do think that deters families from traveling. And the big thing here is it's in Paris, Shane. It was like London. The crowds that went to London were the same. It was a home Olympics, home Paralympics for us. The next one is in LA. The one after that is in Brisbane. And even talking to families today, I was at the track cycling, I was talking to a lot of the family members, and they're saying, look, we're coming to this. We're not going to make it to LA. Like, it's just so far away. It's going to be very expensive to get to. You know, Paris is an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and a half on the plane from Dublin. You know, it's so accessible, isn't it? And the big Irish area was lovely. I did the huge French support there in the Velodrome today. But I think in terms of the next nation with more support, I think it was the Irish. There's so many tricolours around. It was just brilliant to see.
No, it is. And hopefully that continues throughout the whole of the games. As I mentioned, there's a lot of action on tomorrow. We're still hopefully will see Nicole Turner in the pool in the final of the S6 50 metre freestyle, and Roisin Éireann a little bit later on. And you mentioned the great stories elsewhere. And we are speaking of swimming, Darren. And I saw teenage swimmer Poppy Maskell created history with Britain's first gold of the Paralympic Games this year. But the 19-year-old from Cheshire, who's making her games debut, set a new world record to win the women's S14 100 metre butterfly. And Maskell's win came moments after teammate Will Ellard took silver in the men's race. We saw the likes of, more on the track, I suppose, in the Olympics, of these world records being smashed, and already we have a world record, because these games in terms of quality as well, because we've seen what Tokyo unfolded, and that was played out with no crowds there. So it's a completely different beast for these athletes, and already they're taking and smashing world records, which is just brilliant to see.
Yeah, do you know, I have actually seen the standards, how they have jumped firsthand, because I actually don't think the television does a lot of these events justice, what these athletes are doing, Shane. And, you know, even the cycling there today, you know, these are elite athletes, and the train, like, they've given up their jobs, they're committed to this full time, and the training that's going into this is absolutely outrageous. And you know, they're getting the reward. Like, if you, I always make the example of, you know, Jason Smith when he was running, and he is actually technically not the fastest Paralympian of all time anymore, but he was in the 100 meters. And I remember on the time of London, just in the build-up to London, Jason ran the 100 meters in, I'm nearly sure it was about 10 seconds, 22, right? 10:22. Okay. And he came very close, would you believe, to qualifying for the actual Olympics. He was like 0.02 of a second, something like that. Don't quote me, that, like, very small margins for qualifying for the actual Olympics itself. And, you know, there is, I know the Usain Bolt's record in the 100 meters, I think it was from 2009, maybe he ran at this 9:58 is the world record, but, you know, 10:22 from Jason. I know, you know, just under a second is a lot in the 100 meters, but when you look at it like that, you know, less than a second of a difference, it's absolutely phenomenal. And you know, these guys are doing things, you know, with disabilities, and it is, you know, to watch some of it is absolutely outrageous. And I think when you see it firsthand, it looks better than what it is on the television. And I'm not trying to take away from it anyway, but, you know, even the speeds, like, if you look at some of the speeds in the velodrome today, like, some of those tandem pairs, the lads, they were going 60 kilometers an hour, you know?
Yeah.
Think about that in a car. That's the speed they were going around that velodrome. So the standards have just gone through the roof. I think we're going to see a lot more records. Saw some today in the velodrome, seen some of the swimming already this evening, and today is day one. So I just think these guys, they're pushing their sports to the absolute limits. It's brilliant to see.
Yes, no, absolutely. Darren, stay in the line, because I do want to get your thoughts. We have Nicole Turner's final now, delayed by just under 5 minutes. But speaking of watching on the television, we can cross to our television colleagues. John Kenny is on commentary for the final of the S6 50-metre freestyle final. Nicole Turner, representing Team Ireland, will be going in lane two very shortly as the athletes come out to the pool now. Ellie Marks making her way out to the pool. Let's join John Kenny.
Two Chinese swimmers have made this decider. One length of the pool, 50 metres freestyle. Here's our fastest qualifier. It's Zhang of China, just 19 years of age. Fastest qualifier. Very busy program for her. She's going in six events in Paris. And she is the 50 metre butterfly S6 winner. She beat Nicole Turner in that final 3 years ago. As we mentioned, James, it's not our main event, but it's a good chance to get the feel of the water from the heats this morning and now in the final. Seems remarkable if she get a medal here, but you never know. She's in a final and anything can happen.
Yeah, that's right, John. She said in her post-race interview that it was just marginally off her personal best of 34 high. So that will really be her target, and then the rest of it will look after itself.
Yeah, outside chance of a bronze here. All seven swimmers inside lane starting off the blocks, and lane 8Z starts from the water. Meester exploded off the blocks. Turner in the white cap is up in lane number two. She's in about fourth place as they pass the 25-meter mark. There's Turner there. And it's going to be Wan and Marks contesting the gold here. Turner won't get amongst the medals, but as I say, this is not our main event. 50 flies to come for her. That's close to the world record. The tapper taps Mark in the back, but Jiang breaks the Paralympic record, her own Paralympic record of 32.70. She's underneath that now, 32.59, the winning time. Marks in second place. And Anna Huntar, the world record holder, has to be content with the bronze. Nicole Turner finishes in sixth place in 35.65.
So a sixth place finish for Nicole Turner. But Darren, I think it has to be emphasised there that this isn't Nicole's main event.
No, absolutely. And you know what, I a lot of the swimmers, they're very busy programs, you know, and it was brilliant for Nicole to get to this final, to be honest with you. And look, she has nothing to prove. She's so much experience. She's only still only 22, believe it or not. But you know what? She's been around a long, long time, has a lot of experience. Silver medal in Tokyo in 2021 in the 50-meter butterfly event. And you know what? I think she's actually, seen her today earlier on in the interview with her afterwards, she's much more mature now about the whole thing, and she's probably trying to take a bit of pressure off her. So to be honest with you, I don't know what she'll say in her post-race interview, but I'd imagine she has set her sights on a medal at these games. But this one today was probably, you know, first day, let's get out, get the cobwebs off, get used to the competition, get used to the pool and the crowds and the atmosphere and everything like that. And, you know, it'll tear up then for a real tilt at a medal in another event.
Great stuff. Darren Farrell, thank you so much for dialing in from day one of the Paralympic Games as Nicole Turner completes her final, the S6 50-metre freestyle. Lots to come in Game On. We're taking a short break, then we'll turn our attention to football.
Game On.
Football.
Now, some breaking football news courtesy of Paul Joyce, journalist with The Times. Liverpool have rejected a bid from Nottingham Forest for Queevin Kelleher. The offer is believed to be well below Liverpool's valuation, and the club was not looking to sell. So that was a talking point. The goalkeepers and first team football for new Republic of Ireland manager Hamer Halgrimsson earlier. He faced the media alongside John O'Shea in the Aviva Stadium this afternoon.
Two games coming up against England, of course, and against Greece. And I know that you had John's involvement very much so in picking the squad. So you can tell me how the dynamic between the two of you is going to work.
Well, as much as dual role as possible. So we share in the load, like this one, interviews and stuff. At the moment, of course, both Paddy and John have more depth and knowledge in the culture, the Irish football culture, the players and the squad in the past, etc. So I'm using and tapping into their knowledge in that selection, and probably the next one as well will be more them than me. So yeah, we hopefully can work with each other's strengths to be a good duo.
John, Casey McAteer is the new name that hasn't been involved even in the squads that you picked. Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, look, he's obviously a good attacking option for us, Tony. Coming in, he was close to being involved in June, but he was, to be fair to him, he'd had some bad hamstring injuries and he just wanted to focus on getting himself fit for Leicester for the start of the Premier League campaign. So, no, it's a great one to have on board, but look, it's just a full focus on the squad. It was some close calls on lots of players, and it's lots of players are sorting their kind of careers out over the next couple of days as well in terms of what clubs they're going to be at. So there's lots going on, and it could be some different players involved going forward as well. But it's great to have fresh blood involved like that, and he's a very talented attacking player.
Isn't that one of your philosophies, Hamir, that you want to try and get, you know, use the diaspora, use the Irish blanket, if you like, to try and get more players involved?
It's not my philosophy, but we did it a lot with Jamaica, found players that could strengthen and help our squad. And the Irish are all over, so no, it's probably the job of the next talent ID officer in the Federation to look at those players. Probably we need to start to select them at a younger age, but when they can switch like him now at the senior team is really good to add to the strength of our squad. But no, we focus on the players available, and of course, we always have an eye on who can play and strengthen our team.
Speaking of who can play, Josh Cullen, I think it's the first time since 2020 that he hasn't been involved in the squad. He's going to be a miss.
Yeah, one of the Amers' first games over to watch some of the players was we went to watch Luton and Burnley. And obviously, maybe Josh wasn't trying to impress too much. But no, look, it's a shame because we know he's an important part of the team and in the squad as well. Obviously, the experience he's gained, as you mentioned, is first couple of games he's missed now in a good few years, so it's a chance for someone else to step into the squad, and that's always the case.
Is midfield an area that, since you've been watching the Ireland games back, where you've been most concerned about him here?
Well, I've said before, probably we have a lot of similar players, similar quality, a lot of them, so it's not, like John said before, it's not a big difference between them, and now we're selecting these ones to look at them. Next camp, maybe we'll look at some others. It depends on how they will do now and how they use their chance now. So, but this is maybe what I've been seeing. My first impression is that we have a lot of players on a similar quality. We need a little bit more variety, I think.
Ferguson and Coleman are back in. For Ferguson, he hasn't really been involved much this campaign so far. I know it's early days. Would you like to see him get some game time before the England game?
It'd be ideal. It'd be ideal, Tony. But also, it was great to see him back in the match day squad the other night for Brighton. And let's see what happens the weekend for them too. But as the manager pointed out, there's 5 days before the England game as well to see and assess everyone and see how many minutes they might be able to play or can they last a full game. But thankfully, we have a good few days to see that beforehand.
Hey, Mir, have you spoken to Seamus Coleman? He's been such an important player and captain for Ireland. 35 years of age, so he's hardly the future.
No, I did when I came here in the early days, and then he got injured. So we were really happy seeing him playing again the day before yesterday, and happy to see him. And he looked really fresh, and he started the season well. He was really fit in the beginning of the season. So. Age for me is irrelevant. If you're good enough, you will play, and who knows? Who knows how long he can play for Ireland, but at the moment, he's looking sharp.
Do you expect you'll be going to Ipswich a lot this season? There's now three, Sammy Smaddocks, Daryl O'Shea, and Chidoze Ogbene.
Yeah, probably we'll see a game or two with Ipswich this season. But hopefully they will get game time. I think Ipswich has now bought like 11 players since the beginning of this season, so it's going to be a big fight of playing positions for Ipswich. Hopefully they will win that fight.
And can I ask you both then, how are you going to organise the dynamic? I mean, the players already are used to John's voice in the dressing room. They're not used to yours yet. How will you work that out between you?
No, we'll do a good duo on it. We'll share the load. That's my wish, that we can share the load as much as possible. In the beginning, like I said before, probably John has a stronger voice. Hopefully I can match that sometime. I hope sooner rather than later, but hopefully we can share the load, and is really important, not only for the national team, but for me as well, to have John and Paddy in the coaching staff.
And are you both looking forward to the visit of England in particular? It has a huge resonance for Irish fans.
Yeah, look, it does. It's obvious the game that stands out because of the... some historic games down through the years against England too. So, but we have full focus on Greece as well because we know how important that would be too. But it's a fantastic game to get the Nations League qualifiers off the start.
Of course, England have a new manager as well, in an Irishman, Lee Carsley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's similar for them probably. The benefit they have is that they just come from a tournament. So in tournaments you have the team for a month or a month and a half, and you can do a lot in a month and a half with the national team. So they have been working on things that and maybe have a little bit advantage from us coming together and having only these 5 days to the game. But we'll see.
And is it the Greece game that you're targeting for a result more so than the England game?
Well, to be honest, England should not be in League B in the Nations League. So everyone is tipping them to win this group, and it's not unfair to say that they are the favourites in this group, but then it's between us, Greece and Finland, so in that sense I think the Greece game is for me at least and equally as important as the England game.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Now that was Tony O'Donoghue, RT soccer correspondent, speaking to Hamer Halgrimson and John O'Shea earlier today. But Jeff Shepherd is on the line, and Shep, you're going to update us with the Irish contingent trying to forge careers in the NFL. Am I right in saying it is good news after all? The practice squad,
yes,
for Charlie Smith.
Yes, Shane. So this is kind of, you know, what we've talked about, you know, so it's not like if you don't make the final roster, you're just done and it's over. So what happened was, is, you know, Charlie Smith had a by all accounts, an incredibly successful training camp at the New Orleans Saints. And so what happens is, you know, this past Tuesday, the team basically had to go from like 90 to 53. All teams in the NFL, it was cut down day. You go from 90 to 53, which is kind of the game day roster. Okay. And then each team has 14 or 15 practice squad players that, you know, are there and available. They helped us, you know, the main team during the week. Because Charlie is part of this international player program, he could make the team, make the practice squad and not count against that, you know, 14 or 15 players on the practice squad. He just needed to clear waivers. And so he was cut on Tuesday. No one signed him within the time period on the waiver wire. And so he re-signed with the New Orleans Saints. So he impressed the team, you know, so much with how he performed. I mean, we think back, the guy wasn't even a kicker like a year ago. You know, I mean, he never kicked in NFL football, you know, up until almost a year ago. And now he is, here he is on a practice squad. So just, yes, it is by no stretch of the imagination to say it's doom and gloom. I mean, this is, you know, he's sitting there and, you know, the Saints could, if one of their kickers gets hurt, he could get called up and be kicking, you know, week one, week two, week seven, something like that. So, and then somebody else, you know, could potentially need a kicker. And so there's still opportunity here is what I'm saying.
For Welsh rugby star, or former Welsh rugby star, Lewis Rees-Zammit, he's in the practice squad for the Jaguars as well. So
that's right.
Lots of action, lots of transactional action going on. We were speaking about the big college football match in the Aviva Stadium earlier on, and you mentioned, Shep, about the buy-in and the interest in this match in particular, and the viewing figures were just astronomical. So it's set new record viewership and delivered significant economic impact, highlighting Ireland's growing reputation as a prime destination for international sporting events. All eyes in America were on the Aviva Stadium.
Absolutely. And look, you know, ESPN kind of went fully all in. They brought their game day program, you know, to the streets of Dublin. And it was basically a 3-hour infomercial for, you know, the beautiful island. And so, I mean, they were all in on everything. I don't really recall them doing that in years past. And if they did, I missed it. But I mean, it was all in. And you got former Alabama coach Nick Saban on there and Pat McAfee, who's a, you know, growing American sports personality, you know, hanging out with Sheamus, the WWE wrestler, you know, so, just kind of, you know, checking a lot of boxes there. But the game itself, huge upset. Georgia Tech knocks off, you know, a top 10, top 12 team in Florida State, you know, on a last second kick. I mean, it had all of the makings, all the drama, everything that you would want for an opening game in college football. And so, you know, I know folks all over the States were watching it. And again, it was basically just a four and a half hour, you know, all total kind of infomercial for Ireland. I mean, what more could you want?
And for the 47,988 fans in attendance at the Aviva Stadium, I'm sure they will be eagerly anticipating more college football this weekend, albeit in America, Shep.
Yeah, so the season really, Shane, kicks off in earnest tonight. You know, you've got a couple of ranked games, a couple of ranked teams playing tonight. But, you know, there's probably 10, 15 games tonight. But it really, I mean, you know, 11 o'clock my time, you know, noon Eastern on Saturday, it all gets going. Number one, Georgia going to take on number 13 or 14, Clemson. Big regional rivalry there. Ohio State's in action. I mean, you've got, you know, great games all weekend. LSU, my school, plays the University of Southern California Sunday night out in Las Vegas. And then there's another game on Monday night. So it's, you know, it's really, you know, what, 4 or 5 days of college football this weekend. And next week we'll be talking about your Jets and the NFL season getting ready to kick off. Cause next week we'll be about 6 hours away from the Chiefs and the Ravens playing to open it up on Thursday night. So, our long national nightmare is over, Shane. Football is back.
The false hope begins once again, Shep. I cannot wait until then, and I'll have my dreams dashed, no doubt, soon after a couple of weeks into the season. We're taking a short break. Lots more to come. Stick with us here in Game On. We're with you all the way till 7 o'clock this evening.
Game On.
Football.
Now, earlier this afternoon, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Rebecca Cray to chat about this weekend's fixtures in the League of Ireland Women's Premier Division.
Game On.
Football.
I mentioned there was one league fixture last week. Galway defeated Piemont 3-1. And we've talked about this before, Rebecca, with Galway winning the Avenir Cup as well. They went on a bit of a run at the start of the season. Mm. Might this be the start of another run? They have the cup now, big win over Piemont, and an opportunity against bottom place Sligo this weekend to really press on and keep the pressure on Athlone and Shells.
Potentially, Shane, like, you know, we obviously mentioned Galway at the start. We were wondering if they could go the whole way without losing the game. Obviously, it didn't come true in that sense, but they had a little bit of a dip in form then, I think, you know, obviously playing Shells down there. Shells probably played the best game of the season against them, but look, they're actually coming into a bit more form now. I can see Julianne Russell seems to be gaining momentum as well. You know, she's two great finishes there at the weekend as well. So that's a scary kind of thing to think of. You know, they're chasing the league at this time. You know, they've games in hand there, and you know, I know from previous kind of experience, sometimes it's nice to be that reactive team. You know, to be chasing the pack, and that pressure is off in a sense. Because no one expects you to go and, you know, maybe win all games that you have in hand, and, you know, all focus is on Shells and Athlone to kind of keep things going on top. So look, I think this will suit them right down to the ground. You know, they got a great win there against Piemont at the weekend, really consecutive win, and obviously traveling to Sligo now, it's not too far for them to go. I'm sure they'd be looking to get another win under the belt.
Yeah, we have a couple of Dublin derbies and a Munster derby as well. If we chat about the Munster derby first, Treaty Cork, because I mentioned earlier, Treaty going to be frustrated with the cup results. Great win for Cork as well. So it has all the makings for a proper derby, intense clash as well, because there's league points at stake and there's only 3 points between these two sides.
Exactly. Yeah, look, as I said, I've said previously, Treaty are that dark horse team for me. You know, Dominic Foley has them really well organised down there. They're very hard to break down. They're really tenacious in their play. You know, they don't back out of a tackle. And I think they've got a few Canadians in there as well who are really good footballers. You know, and look at Cork. Danny Murphy has got the girls well oiled and well drilled. And I think Orla O'Mahony coming back in there, I think she was missing against Shells, or, you know, had an injury. She kind of just settles them down in that midfield area. It allows Eva Mangan to kind of do her thing and, you know, progress further up the pitch, and just gives them that better attacking element. So look, these two teams, not much in it between them, will no doubt be a good football and spectacle, but might be a little bit of edge to it too, you know, given it's a Munster derby. But yeah, definitely a good game to look out for.
Speaking of match with a bit of edge to it, is this the perfect time for Piemont to play Rovers, considering I would imagine morale is just going to be rock bottom, considering the two cup defeats, ace in the table now as well, and Piemont, they'll be gunning for a victory considering they're coming off the back of a loss.
Yeah, look, I think they're both two teams in similar kind of situations, you know, probably both underperforming given the personnel that they have at their exposure. Obviously, Piemont have been diminished slightly with Aaron McLaughlin heading off, so Doyle has been kind of out with a long-term injury. And obviously Rovers, you know, they have obviously got good players, Jess Hennessy, Anya O'Gorman, Steph Roach to name but a few, obviously Joy Ralph being the younger one up there. But yeah, look, they've obviously not had a good run in recent times at Rovers. You know, it might be a case for both teams coming to prove a point this weekend. I really don't know. I can't see anything more than a draw there, to be honest with you. These games, no matter what, are always good games to watch. And look, hopefully there is some goals for the neutral.
And both Shells, like we talk about, and I kind of posed a question about, will Rovers be rock bottom in terms of morale? If Shells didn't get that last minute winner in extra time, you would have had the defeat to Athlone, knocked out of the cup, and it would have been very, very difficult to go again, I would imagine, as well.
I think Shells just need to get back to basics, you know, try and hold those experiences that they've had in previous seasons. And look, obviously it's live on TV as well. So look, it'd be a great game for people to get out to. Hopefully a lot of people will. But also if people can't, it'll be live on TG Carra.
Bows very well measured on the pitch. 7:35 kickoff for Bow Shells live on TG Carra. 5 o'clock for Galway Sligo, Peas Rovers, and indeed Treaty Cork. Great stuff. Okay, lots to look forward to. For now, Rebecca Craig, thanks so much for joining us.
Cheers, Shane.
And fear not, we will be podcasting that chat in full after the show. Before we go, Greg Allen joins us from Carton House on day one of the Women's Irish Open. What's been happening, Greg?
Well, Leona Maguire has got off to a pretty good start. You know, this is a tournament that she so badly would love to win. She has won on the Ladies European Tour this year already, just a month ago in London. But to put an Irish Open title on top of that would be huge for her, I think. And she shot a round of 70, 3 under par. She's only 3 strokes off the lead. She's tied for 7th place. All her birdies came on par 5s. Fair bit of frustration on the greens in terms of, you know, putts that she thought might go in, like one on the very first hole from 12 feet for eagle, somehow defied gravity by not going down. But on 17, she did manage to hole from around 15 feet for her third birdie of the day. There were no bogeys, so she's right up there now, and that means that the lead at six under par, Ursula Wikström of Finland coming down 18, is one stroke clear on six under from Alessandra Fanali of Italy on five under. Luna Sobrin-Galmez of Spain is on five under par. And then in the group, tied for seventh place, is Leona Maguire with that round of 73 under par. Nice start for her. Olivia Mahaffey playing her first tournament in having taken a 10-week break. She shot a one under par 72. Lauren Walsh had a missed short putt on 18, disappointing round of 74, but still not too far out of the contention stakes on one over par. And Anna Abom, the under 18 Irish international amateur, two under par after 16, and she is the par 5 17th to come. Also Olivia Costello, a 16 year old amateur, she's level par after 14. Roisin Scanlon, 16 year old, one over par after a 74. So plenty of good young talent coming through with scores and that are very, very prospectful for the weekend, but they're all inspired by Leona Maguire, who's the leading Irish player here, three under par, three strokes off the leader, Ursula Wikström.
Great stuff. Thanks, Greg. That is all we have time for. Dermot O'Brien is up next with the new music show, but first we'll check in with the news desk. Game On is back from 6 o'clock tomorrow.